Hello, everybody, and warm greetings. I'm Liz Miller, and you've tuned in for another Frequency Shifting, Mind Stretching, Divinely Aligning edition of Otherware, the show designed to help you get a handle on your hologram. Broadcasting to you live today from Melbourne, Down Under, where this week's guest also resides. Today we're going to be exploring two of my favourite subjects with one of my favourite people. The subjects are yoga and the Indigenous South America. When we cross live to my dear friend Tanya Adams, yoga teacher and now tour guide, who will be leading a week-long yoga retreat in the Peruvian rainforest that I will be joining this August. Tanya has been a full-time yoga instructor for the last 11 years, having studied and taught a number of yoga styles and after experiencing her own personal healing journey. Tanya's focus is now integral style yoga as a tool for therapy and healing. So if you'd like to learn more about yogic practices and philosophy, perhaps learn a breathing technique or two, and find out about the sacred plant medicine ceremonies held in South America, then this show is for you. Thank you for joining me in the cyberspace noosphere as we cover all 25 of the world's time zones. And no matter which one you're in, I'm really delighted that you've joined us. This is our first broadcast on the new BBS Radio Late Night Stream 2, which makes Otherware a little harder to find on the schedule, and we've started a little bit late today as well. So to all of you who sought out the program and made it here today and are still here, an extra special thank you to you. But first, you're listening to Otherware, which I like to call anything that activates, enhances, or evolves the inner technologies of the multidimensional human. You're also listening to a one-of-a-kind program. I don't think, well, actually, there's not much music on the show today, so I can't claim that we're playing a whole lot of great deep house music, but normally that's what you'd be hearing as well. But today I thought we'd do the show live. We can take some calls, which will be a lot of fun. So please, have a look at the bbsradio.com homepage, have a look at the numbers for the late night stream, and at any time, if you feel like you'd like to join in the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. So first, let's welcome Tanya on the line. Tanya Adams, welcome to Otherware.
Thanks, Liz.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm very, very well. So I mentioned at the start in the introduction that you're a dear friend of mine. We've known each other for a long, long time. So this will be great for the audience. I don't think they've ever had a chance to hear me chatting to someone who I know is a close personal friend. And I think perhaps we'll be able to have some fun because of that in a different way than I would normally with my other guests. So let's tell everybody how we met and how long we've known each other for. Do you actually remember when we met, Tan?
I was going to ask you if you remember. I definitely do. Would you like me to share it?
Do you remember? Yeah, I'd like to hear your memory of how we met.
Well, as far as I remember, it was maybe a week before your 19th birthday party. And I must
That's
have
right.
been 16, and we met in the street.
We met in the street? Now, that's weird, because I thought we met in a nightclub.
Well, I think we became friends in the nightclub, but remember where we used to watch a group of buskers performing in Bourke Street?
That's
and
right.
I'd met some other friends of ours, and they introduced me to you, and you invited me to your birthday party the next week at that nightclub.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so that was... Oh, I'm so glad you remembered that. Buskers were great. They used to sing Violent Femme songs, and we used to love listening to them every week, and there were a couple of cute boys in their group as well, so that helped. But yeah, I remember the first time that I really remember actually talking to you properly was in a nightclub, yeah, and it was my 19th birthday. And I just remember thinking at the time, I really, really like this girl. You know, there was just
That's
something
so nice.
About you that drew me to you. And you know, when I was preparing for today's show, I was thinking about how long we've known each other now, and it's a long time. To think that we met when we were first teenagers. And a lot of the people that were part of our circle back then, many of them are people that both you and I keep in touch with. And in many ways, a lot of them are people who've developed on their own spiritual paths, along very similar paths to us in some cases. A couple of our closest friends also became yoga teachers, as you ended up becoming a yoga teacher a few years later. And I just think when you look at it in that sort of context and you see the connections that people have and the paths that they've walked is, you know, from adolescence up into adulthood, it's really remarkable, don't you think, that we all connected that early on, that somehow we all found our way to one another. And it was while we were still forming our, you know, ideas about life and about ourselves and about where we wanted to go, but on some deeper level, we were brought together. And now, look, you and I are on the radio talking about how we first met, and over the next couple of hours, we're going to be sharing with the audience a lot of anecdotes about your personal healing journey, your own studies through different yogic practices, and, of course, the upcoming trip to Peru. So it's going to be a fantastic show. But what do you think about those comments that I just made?
Well, they remind me of, obviously, the beginning days in yoga. I mean, I practiced yoga when I was a kid, but I really came back to it around the time that you did and through your recommendations at the school. And after that, I'm not sure if I told you this, but I'll share it now with everyone. I actually had an intuitive reading done with one of the directors of that yoga school. And she said that we as a group had been together before and that we had made a pact to come back together and to work in the way of really helping each other move through anything that we didn't need to experience in this life and to keep each other strong in the spiritual practices that we now have really deeply in our lives. So that meant a lot to me, actually, and it made a lot of sense with the way we've, you know, been through lots of different experiences and gone through lots of different sort of lifestyles and always come back to that sense of, you know, yoga being that thing that holds us together personally and as a group.
Oh, that's really interesting, and thank you for sharing that, because I hadn't heard that before, but it certainly echoes exactly how I feel about it. And I really enjoy, now it's, you know, I'm going to be 40 in a couple of months, you know, now that I've got a two decades that I can look back on in my life as an adult, which is pretty wild to think about in its own right.
Wild to think about the years and the experiences.
What was that?
Is it wild to think about the experiences or just the time frame?
It's wild definitely to think about the experiences, but more just about the fact that I can actually say I can look back over two decades now. As someone who feels eternally youthful. So it's pretty wonderful to be reaching my fourth decade, or my fifth decade actually, won't it be? And yeah, just to have had such a rich life experience to draw on and to be able to look back at all the people in my life, the ones who've been there since I was very young, the ones that have come along the path for certain times and then have gone away again, and others who were lifelong friends who have completely fallen away over the last few years, and just to see, you know, how our lives have intersected and influenced one another's, and there's definitely been a lot of influence in our lives with each other, and that's something that we'll definitely be able to chat about, and I can't wait to continue with when we actually go to Peru, because both you and I, we have a very, very deep sense of home when we think about South America and Peru specifically.
Mm, yes.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do is let's chat firstly about what took you to Peru, because you experienced a pretty incredible healing when you were there last year, and you had been ill for a number of years prior to that, and I think Peru was pretty much your last resort, wasn't it?
It felt that way. It did, yeah.
So let's have a chat about, firstly, your entree into yoga, how that changed your life, and then we'll just keep following that path through time up to the present. I think that's probably the best way for us to navigate our way through our discussion. So tell me, how did yoga change your life, Tanya?
Wow, that's a big question. It has changed my life dramatically, but I can't say how I felt before I started practicing yoga because it's just a distant memory. I started practicing meditation when I was about 14, so it was kind of one of those growing experiences as I grew up. It was always there with me. But I can definitely say, jumping ahead a little bit to the healing perspective, that although yoga never healed me of my physical illnesses, it stopped me from going insane. it let me have enough peace to be okay and to just recognize all the time that deep knowledge over years of practice that I'm not just the body, I'm not just the mind. It really kept me feeling okay through horrible pain and really difficult illness.
What was it that drew you to yogic philosophy and to the physical yoga as well when you first started practicing in this life?
Well, I started practicing the physical asanas when I was about 7 or 8 years old, and it was really just on the recommendation of my mother and her sister. And we had been to a lot of different, spiritual organizations and things like that, and they decided to practice yoga and then decided that my sister and I should as well. So that became a childhood thing for my sister and I. Of course, when you're a child, you don't continue anything forever. So at one point or another, we stopped doing that. But then I was always very introverted and very sensitive. And I guess I looked at that not so positively back then, but now I see it's just my nature and it's beautiful. But because I needed to come to terms with that and be peaceful, my mother recognized that and taught me meditation practices when I was 14. So that was the link with the meditation and the hatha practice. But then, again, letting go of that for a long time, and I think I was about 18 when I came back to the Gita school through you and started practicing not the hatha yoga, but the esoteric, the philosophy of yoga, and then eventually the whole thing.
The memory that I have of you before you began at Gita, and we should just tell people briefly about this school, it's called Gita International Yoga, and it's spelled G-I-T-A. It's an abbreviation of the name of the first founder of the yoga school, Margaret Sigesman, who was called Gita as a child. And there's a fascinating story behind the school itself. It's the oldest yoga school in Australia, and I believe that the curriculum that they teach, as well as the teacher training course that they hold there, which goes for a couple of years part-time, but it feels like full-time, is basically the template that all other yoga schools are now sort of following, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a very old school, and the way that they practice is in a very, I was going to say a very traditional way, but I guess a very individual way.
Yeah, they have their own style, and it's definitely yoga that's been developed specifically for Westerners and Western minds. But can you share a story about Margaret Sigesman for the audience?
Sure. I mean, I met Margaret Sigesman once in her later years just before she passed away, actually, just in a group setting. She was giving a couple of talks at the school, and my main memory of stories that I heard about her were just her amazing strength and, you know, her suffering, because she had an illness. She had tuberculosis, I think, all of her life. And the story that you hear at Geeta over and over again is that she had, I think, a third of a lung left, and she kept herself alive through pranayama practices, breathing practices, and etheric or energy breathing practices, so that she could just fill up her body with enough life force for the day, go to sleep, and do it again the next day, just to keep going and keep teaching. And I never had the opportunity to do classes with her, but I hear she was an amazing teacher as well, very strong, very strict, which is kind of nice when you're really working for alignment in the physical body, and just a very, very inspiring woman.
Yes, she was taught by Elisabeth Heike from Germany, a very well-known yoga instructor there, and comes from a very long line of Indian yogis as well. Do you know any of her Indian gurus?
No, I've always thought that the main teacher that she had, that she really developed or that she brought the style from, was someone unknown that she never mentioned. But since then I've heard from other people that they have heard of who that was, but they couldn't remember the name or something like that. So I'm really not sure, but it's so similar in style to Shivananda Yoga that I'm thinking maybe there's a link in there somehow.
Yeah. One of the best stories that I remember from Tales of Margaret's Life, as we were told this by her, the two people that she nominated to continue running the school once she retired, they told many, many stories about Margaret and her life. And one of them was from the times when she was living in a cave in the Himalayas with her guru, who was someone she spent 30 years with after living a very privileged life in Switzerland, where she grew up, and leaving it all behind, basically, to become a yogi. She lived in a cave for 30 years in the Himalayas with virtually her robes, and that was about it. And when the rare occasions arose that they needed to clean their robes, they would both strip off naked and wash them very, very quickly because it was freezing cold, and fold them up neatly, sit on them, and generate heat into their buttocks so that in 10 minutes the robes would be completely dry again. And I just thought, just, it's such an amazing example of how we can train our bodies to do these incredible things, and how yogic
and a handy skill to have.
Very handy. So now that we've told everyone about the great yoga school that we've both sort of come out of, let's have a chat about, I wanted to go straight into something else, and I've completely forgotten what I was going to say, but basically the style of yoga that you learned there was Hatha yoga, and you've also studied many other styles of yoga. One of them is integral yoga, which is the style of yoga that you prefer these days. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between Hatha yoga and the other multitudinous other kinds of yogas that are out there, and what yoga actually means to you?
I can, yes. Well, integral yoga, which is my main focus now, is a style of Hatha yoga. So it's very, very similar to what I was doing with Geeta yoga. I haven't actually studied in depth or trained in any other styles, but I have been involved in another yoga school that takes its main focus from the Himalayan Institute, which is Swami Rama's stream of yoga. And that style is beautiful. I've done a little bit of work in that, but not a lot of deep training to understand it completely. Also, I've practiced a little bit of Iyengar and a little bit of Ashtanga yoga, which I love, but for lots of reasons that were good at the time, my body wasn't fit enough to continue with those at the time with my illness. So integral yoga is basically working on integrating all of the systems of yoga into one class. So if you're teaching a class or going to a class, you'll do asana practice or the yoga postures, you'll do pranayama, breathing exercises, you'll always do a long, deep yoga nidra, deep relaxation, and you'll do some meditation in that class as well. Also, nada yoga or the yoga of sound through chanting in every class too. So it really brings that whole depth of yoga plus Raja yoga, of course, the philosophy of yoga into the class as well. So it brings all of that together in one experience. So you can go to a class for an hour and a half and come out feeling completely balanced and very, very still and at peace just from that one experience. Very similar to Gita yoga, but I guess the main difference for me that I've noticed is that it's a little bit more structured, which some people prefer, some people don't, but there's always a yoga nidra. It's always taught the same way. There's always breathing practices, and it's always the same too in the beginning level particularly. So it's very, very structured and very focused on continuing and improving all of the time.
And what does yoga actually mean to you?
That's an interesting question, because my path over the last probably 10 years has been amazing. The way I feel about yoga has changed so incredibly over the last probably 4 years because of what I've been through. I think for a long time it was a little bit outside, and now it's way more integrated in me. When I do my practice every morning, I do what my body wants to do now, and I really get a sense of what I need, not necessarily practicing in a very gentle way, but being very gentle with myself. So to me now, yoga is something that's very, very personal. Even though I teach sometimes a lot of classes, back around the time when I was having the challenges with illness, I was teaching a lot of classes, and because of a lot of different things that were going on in my life, it became a bit of an external thing that I was doing and teaching and loving, but there wasn't that real sense of it being a practice that was just for me and then sharing out from my heart. So that's changed completely now. Now it's something for me that allows me to really experience the depths of my soul, and from that joy and from that bliss, that's where I share, and that's what I want to open up and share with other people, so they have, you know, not the same experience as me, but so they can find that real depth of themselves as well.
That's a really beautiful way of putting it, and I think that what you've just said is, you know, the true hallmark of a great teacher, because when you're teaching from your heart, or you're sharing from your heart something that you have a deep passion for, then that will be communicated in the teaching as well at a more subtle level. And I'm sure that it enhances the way that the students integrate the work in their own lives as well. As a yoga teacher of many years myself, I know what you were sort of, you know, touching on there, which is, sometimes when you work in a profession such as yoga and you're the teacher, it's very easy to let it become an external thing, because it becomes your bread and butter. It becomes the way that you pay your bills. And so you need to be out there and you need to be working, hopefully as often as is comfortable for you, so that you can, you know, achieve everything that you need to achieve. But in many, many cases, and I've definitely gone through periods of this myself, you burn yourself out in a sense with so many classes where you're giving, and if you're not taking the time to do the practice for yourself, then it isn't something that is as internal as the way that you were describing just then. Of course, it's still in you, and you're still able to project that to the class, and hopefully the class gets a really great experience, but there is just a totally different quality in the teaching when you can see that the instructor is really teaching because they're just so so in love with whatever it is that they have to share. And that, you know, is very infectious, and the students feel that. And it's a wonderful thing for the students to feel and to see. It's very, very inspiring. And so we've talked a little bit about these challenges that you had. Let's talk about that now. You spent a number of years after you graduated from the Geeta School as a fully qualified Hatha instructor and taught many classes, and it was at this time, a couple of years down the track, that you started to experience some quite severe pains in the body. Did you take it from there, Tanya?
Sure. My experience was really starting off with that absolute bliss of teaching. I love yoga, and it wasn't necessarily that it was my whole life, but I wanted to share it as much as possible. So I started after a short time just doing that as my job, and it was beautiful and it was fantastic. And I think that I have in the past recommended to people starting out to not do too much teaching in the beginning because of that feeling of being burnt out that can so easily happen. But I think that's really changed in my mind now. It's not so much how many classes you're out there teaching. It's more how much you're honouring other aspects of yourself and of your life that you really need to in order to be whole. And for me, I'm sure now, looking back, my whole focus was on yoga being, you know, the most important thing, and it was my work, it was what I did for myself. I had times when I was out having a great time as well, but there were other aspects of self that I really was kind of ignoring. And every time I would look at that, I would say to myself, well, it doesn't matter. Everything's an illusion. You know, yoga philosophy teaches us that it's all illusion. It doesn't matter if you just have a strong meditation practice. If you just do more yoga, you'll feel happy. And there was a lot of stuff in my life that I would have been better to look at. And it got to the point where I was running so many classes a week that I was feeling like I was having a nervous breakdown. And really, physically, I was. It wasn't because I was driving around and teaching all these classes. It was just that my body was starting to shut down from illness. After that, I started training in a different style. I always had this awareness that there was something else out there. So integral yoga really found me, and a lot of sort of dreams and almost like visions had come to me about this other style and this other teacher. So when that came along, I jumped into the training and then started a yoga center with two other people. And that was when I started to get very, very sick. I ended up having ovarian cysts that I had to have removed. And so I was in a lot of pain for quite a few months and had surgery, complications with that surgery, had to have more, you know, things worked on, and then found out after a little while that I had endometriosis. And if you don't know what that is, it's basically when the cells that make up the lining of the womb, they grow or migrate to other areas of the body, and when they try and shed, as the lining of the womb does, it causes internal bleeding. There's nowhere for those cells to go, so it's extremely painful. And it can be extremely painful all through the month or just at the menstruation time. Unfortunately for me, or fortunately because it was a great journey, it was all through the month. And that got steadily worse and worse and worse. I basically had 5 operations in the space of 2 years, and nothing happened. Within the healing time from the surgery, the cells had grown back to the same level as before. So after a while of this, I just said, this is enough, and decided to go down the path of Chinese medicine. And at this time, I moved overseas to live at the yoga ashram in the US where I'd been training the year before. So I'd moved to a whole other country, started trying to do a new job.
Sorry, sweetheart, can I just get you to tell everybody what the name of that yoga ashram was in the US that you visited?
Sure. It was Satchitananda Ashram in Virginia. And it was basically, it is the headquarters of Integral Yoga, and our yoga teacher or guru was living there at the time, Swami Satchitananda. So it was an amazing place to be. Unfortunately, well, it was meant to be. I was very, very sick there, so I was in pain all the time. I had to leave the country in a wheelchair because I couldn't sit up or stand up for more than 5 minutes at a time and still breathe. And a few healing stories happened there as well. I had an amazing diet that helped a lot. But basically, I was in a lot of pain. And there I developed a chronic fatigue condition as well. My nervous system was shut down through pain. I'm sure my body just got worn out from so much pain. And I eventually decided I needed to come home and just be for a little while and not try and work and, you know, just be at home. So I had, this is a long story, isn't it?
No, that's okay. I want to just jump in here and say that at the time when Tanya did come home, I caught up with her and I was so shocked when I saw her. I remember looking at you, Tan, and you were completely listless. You were speaking very, very quietly. You were on a very strict macrobiotic diet, which even though I could tell and you told me had been helping you a lot with some of the symptoms, my heart just went out to you because you were telling me about what kinds of foods you were having to eat, and I just, there was nothing flavorful, you know, and I just felt for you so, so much. And I know that there were things that you could make that weren't too bad. But, and, you know, I know you really enjoy eating lots of different kinds of foods, and you were just so limited on that level as well. And you were basically, you were in a state of very quiet hopelessness, I think. Even though you were always doing things to try and make it better, the more it went on, the longer it continued, I could see that a part of you was kind of breaking, and it was really, really sad to see. And I just didn't know how you were going to find help. But shortly after that, I remember you telling me that there was a woman that you found in Adelaide who was able to give you some considerable relief from the pain. But anyway, you continue with the rest of the story.
Okay, well, yeah, on that note, the diet for me was actually great. It was very limiting in that I couldn't eat out because I couldn't have anything with any kind of spices in it, as well as all the other limitations. So it made eating in restaurants impossible, but my physical condition wouldn't allow that anyway. So I was okay with the diet. And when I went to see this macrobiotic healer, he basically said, if you follow this diet, you'll be 90% better within 4 months. And he was absolutely right. This is a man called Michael Rostoff who works out of Asheville in North Carolina. And I feel like he saved my life. I mean, I wouldn't have died, but I was in so much pain, and he improved it a lot. But it never really took it away for me. I couldn't have treatments with him. He's a Chinese practitioner as well, or Chinese medical practitioner, but when I came home, I was really guided on every step of this healing journey. The next person I saw before the woman in Adelaide was actually a man who was working on different vitamins to increase the body's healing. And he was getting me pretty up there with my energy. I had so little energy most days I couldn't hold a book and read. And I would just get up out of bed, have a shower, have breakfast, and that was my activity for the day. I'd maybe walk out to a tree out the front of the house and back again as my exercise. So he was helping a little. Unfortunately, he died right at the time when I was getting a lot of benefit from him, and he never had anybody that he passed on his way of treatment to. So I felt sad because I was close with him, And I also felt a little bit of that helplessness that you described, seeing where it was always up to me to find the next person to work with. I could never get any medical help because there was just nothing that would work unless I went on drugs that were later found to be causing heart disease and loss of bone density and all that sort of thing. So I found this woman in Adelaide and started working with her. And she actually was the first one to be able to tell me what was wrong with me, and that I felt really resonated with her diagnosis. And it turned out that I had, my nervous system had almost completely shut down. I had endometriosis still and a lot of scar tissue in my pelvis. And I also had a huge hormonal imbalance with my adrenal and my pituitary glands. So basically I was producing lots of adrenaline, but my body couldn't convert that to energy. So that was the chronic fatigue condition. I always had this anxious energy and nothing else. And my pituitary gland had no function almost at all. So it would get very swollen and press on my optic nerve and cause intense pain in the back of my eyes. So similar to that beginning of a migraine feeling 24 hours a day. As well as that, it was affecting my vision and my concentration. And a lot of people with chronic fatigue syndrome describe a cloud of fogginess in their head that was constantly with me for over 4 years. I couldn't have a conversation with somebody and focus on what they were saying because of that fog and the pain. And it was like I couldn't come out of myself. There was this fog that was trapping me deep inside, and I couldn't interact with the world. And Liz, that's what you saw in me that time when we were together.
Yeah, and it was frightening on so many levels. I mean, for a start, you're a yoga teacher. I'm a yoga teacher. We both understand how beautifully that system of healing works, and it targets the endocrine glands, the adrenals, and the pituitary and pineal are all endocrine glands. So obviously for me, I was being challenged on, well, how can my friend, who's a yoga teacher, who is so healthy and lives such a healthy lifestyle, eats really pure food, does everything humanly possible to keep herself well, how can she be so sick? How can she continue to be so sick? That was really hard to deal with. And, of course, I'm the kind of person that wants to, in any way I can, help if I can, because I've learnt so many different healing skills. But there was just no way that I could, there wasn't anything I could offer you, because you had a very definite path that you needed to walk, and all of these people that came along to a part of this healing journey of yours were people that you had to find. So, you know, I'm sitting there feeling like my hands are completely tied, my heart's going out to you, but I was feeling almost just as helpless, you know, there just seemed to be no way out of this. And it had been such a long time. So when you found this woman in Adelaide and she started to actually make some real progress with you, did you start thinking, this is it, I'm going to be well again?
I always knew I was going to be well again. I never for a moment thought, this is it, this is how I have to be, I have to just accept it. I accepted that this was something I needed to live through and experience, but I always knew I would get through it. The challenging part, well, one of the challenging parts was that I didn't actually remember how it felt to feel well, and that used to upset me a lot. But with the yoga and the healing, with what you mentioned just then, I'd like to just share that I still believe in yoga as a tool for healing, and I still believe that it can be the right path for some people, but I think it's a really beautiful thing that in life you have to go through challenging experiences until they're over, until, you know. And for me, I was meant to seek more and go deeper, and there was a deep disconnection in me that to practice yoga on and on and on would not have really addressed, because it was something that I'd already done for so long. So for me, I needed to find something that was going to reconnect parts of myself that I was not connected to. And for a lot of people, that is yoga. For me, it needed to, for whatever reason, to be something else. So I found this woman in Adelaide, and my partner was actually very involved with the whole healing process. He had recommended the man who was working with the vitamins who passed away. Then his sister had done some healing work with me as well and told me a lot of really beautiful things about some guides and people who were working with me on another level. And then through him and his family, we found this woman in Adelaide, and she told me what was wrong, and she said, yes, I can fix it. And that to me was such a relief. And there was a time, I was seeing her every month for a year, so I would spend 4 days a month in South Australia and then drive home again. And there was a time when she would work on the things in my head. I had a lot of pain in my head and that spaced out feeling. And one time towards the middle of the year, she actually released it completely. And I had 4 days of no symptoms. And I felt clear in my head and I felt no pain for 4 days. And I was just in bliss. And then after 4 days, it all came back. And she never could quite do it again. And I totally believe in her as a healer, but she often said to me, you know, it's just really, really hard to balance this. And in the end, my last session with her, she said, look, I don't know if I can completely fix this imbalance, and you might just have to be okay with this is the way you're going to be for the rest of life, and that has to be okay. She was quite strong and harsh in the way she said it too, and I know now that she was being guided to direct me somewhere else. There was a lot of work there with spirit, and I was really being told deeply, it's time to go deeper. So when she said, look, you might just have to accept that this is life, I just thought, that's just crap. And that's when I decided to go and work with some traditional healers in the jungle in South America.
Let's talk about that connection that you have with Indigenous peoples and cultures around the world, particularly in the Americas. I know that you've had many interactions over the last few years with elders from North America as well as South America. And I'd love it if you could share some of those experiences with us and why it is that you feel so drawn to the Indigenous cultures and their ceremonies and traditions.
Well, I feel drawn to the cultures mostly because their cultures are still so strong and they're still so connected to their cultures as opposed to our culture, which is so disconnected from the traditional earth ways. And I know that we once were connected in that way, but for the most part, we've lost sight of that, and we've lost sight of our connection with the earth, and that's why I really look up to these people who still have that strong sense of self and strong sense of earth ways about them, and healing ways come from that as well. I mean, that's why there's still amazing healers in that part of the world. So my experience actually with some traditional people in the Americas has actually been quite limited, but I guess my main experience with North American Indigenous people has been with the Lakota Foundation, which is a non-profit organization based in South Dakota. And my partner has been involved with the founder of that organization for a long time, working with him. His main focus is promoting and preserving sacred sites around the world and Indigenous ways within his own people and with all traditional people around the world. So he runs an event called World Peace and Prayer Day every year on the solstice on June 21st. And my partner Jared had brought him out here in 2003 to run an event here in Australia. So that's where I met him and his family and was involved in volunteering for that event. And that was huge for me. That was at the time when I was probably at my worst physically. But to be involved in something so amazing and so beautiful, it was very, very healing for me.
So I guess through him as well, through Jared, I had a little bit of a link with the Indigenous people in South America. I had read a lot about their healing ways, but he had actually experienced a similar healing experience 5 years before in Ecuador. And the day when I spoke with the healer in Adelaide and she said, "That's all I can do," he just said, "Look, go to the Amazon, just go to the rainforest and have some healing there." And I said, "Yeah, that's exactly what I need to do." And before you decided to go away to Peru, had you learnt much about the sacred plant ceremonies that called ayahuasca before you left?
I had done some reading years and years before about healing ceremonies around those areas, and so I knew about plant medicine and the spirits of the plants through just my own research and interest, and also through later stories of other people who had those sorts of healings. So I knew what I was getting into, and I had complete faith, not that I would be necessarily healed, but that it would be a deep journey that I needed to take no matter what happened to my physical body.
Well, that's good. I think it's something that, you know, I'm going to really enjoy talking with you about, that element of the trip that you took, because it's something that I've been researching myself for many, many years, and I've over the years heard a number of fantastic interviews with researchers who are researching shamanic practices around the world, and also about some of the work that's been done with bringing the knowledge of the sacred plant ceremonies from the south into the west, where they're now using compounds that have been derived from the iboga mushroom and other plants that are found in South America that contain DMT or dimethyltryptamine, which is the active chemical or molecule in the ayahuasca brew, that's one of the plant medicines that the shaman work with down there. And what they're doing is they're opening up clinics. There's actually a number of iboga clinics that have just opened up that treat people who are long-term heroin addicts. And they're finding that they're getting amazing results with these therapies, because what happens essentially is that you open, you increase the amount of DMT in the brain. That affects the pineal gland. The pineal gland, which is part of our third-dimensional anatomy, also has its multi-dimensional counterpart. And physically, the pineal gland is releasing all these different hormones that allow you to take a very deep inner journey and go through what many describe as a life review. And after that life review, many, 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 in fact, the majority of people who have these experiences, who have had problems either with addictions or behavioral problems or even physical illnesses, report that they are completely cured afterwards. And something similar happened to you, didn't it? So how shall we get to talk all about that stuff? Is there anything before the Peru journey that you'd like to mention before we actually launch straight into all of that?
Only that, again, I was completely guided every step of the way, and I was prepared to go to Ecuador and work with a certain group that I'd heard of, and almost to the point of booking a trip. And then I got an email, I think the day before I was going to book the trip, to go on another trip, an invitation with Dr. Alberto Velodo, who is the person I ended up travelling with. And his journey was just, it looked so amazing. It was calling me so strongly, this is where you need to go. And instead of Ecuador, it was into Peru. And, you know, I booked into that one right away and ended up teaching the yoga classes on his trip as well, because he's quite into practicing yoga too. And he is an amazing man, and Yeah, would you please tell the audience a little bit about him and some of the work that he has done?
Well, I don't know that much about him, so I'm probably not qualified to give a bio on him or anything, but he's written a lot of books on shamanic practice, and his probably most well-known book is one called Shaman Healer Sage, and he runs a school called the Healing the Light Body School. His organisation is called the Four Winds, and he has trained with the medicine people in the jungle and also in the high Andes for the past 30 years. And now what he does is trains people in medicine ways himself and takes expeditions into Peru, into the jungle doing cleansing work, into the mountains. His focus seems to be really working with the Andean shamans, so healing work. And he takes a lot of people who are training in his courses to meet the people that he's trained with and to experience their healing techniques and their prayer techniques and to really be given the rites or the initiations from them so that that strengthens your healing work personally when you return. So amazing work that he's doing. He has a foundation as well with some charity work in the mountains in Peru too. If you go to his website at thefourwinds.com, it'll tell you more about that as well.
Great. So you chose to go along this journey with Albert Fililodo, and what were your first impressions of South America when you landed?
It was amazing. It was so beautiful. I had always wanted to go to Peru, and I knew I would one day, but I never thought that I would go now. I mean, it seems crazy to have an adventure at this point in my life, but this was where the journey took me. So flying over Peru before we even landed was amazing. I had dreams that were just guiding me so strongly. And as soon as we arrived in the jungle, I travelled alone as well and then met up with the group there. As soon as we arrived and we were on the boats on the river, I was just in complete bliss. I was still in pain and I was still, you know, having the energy challenges, but I was okay enough to be there. But I was just in bliss because we were in the Amazon and the energy of that place is so intense, and it's all of the life of the jungle, but it's also the depth of feeling and integrity and thanksgiving that the people in that whole country still have. You know, everything is an offering to the earth, and it's just so strong there. It's amazing.
And did you feel like it was like coming home?
It didn't feel like home, but it felt like a reconnection. Not necessarily that this was somewhere that I'd lived before or wanted to live or was my physical home, but, you know, particularly after the ceremonies, there was an amazing reconnection with the earth that continues now wherever I am in the world. But the feeling there was more of being in paradise.
I'm terribly sorry about that. We were cut off inadvertently. I'm not really sure how that happened. But we were just starting to get to the really, really good bits. So, Tan, tell us a little bit about what would happen during the days and in the evenings, or what's the plan for this week-long yoga retreat? Or actually, was it a yoga retreat, or how did Alberto promote the trip?
Well, it was actually, he called the trip, I think in the last year, the healer's journey, but this year he'd changed it to be called the Via Illuminata. So this year's focus was on receiving the rites from the Andean shamans, and it was amazing. He began in the jungle as a way of shedding and letting go of the past. So we had 3 days in the Amazon and then 2 weeks or a little more in the Andes. So for me, the Amazon was the amazing part because of my personal healing. So it wasn't a yoga trip, but because he told me himself, because he loves to do yoga, he likes to have a yoga teacher on board. So every day yoga was offered as one of the activities in the morning. So every morning we had a yoga session.
And how did you go with teaching the classes when you weren't 100% yourself?
That was amazing. The first class that we did was the second day in the jungle, and I had thought, okay, the mornings aren't my best time. I'm usually in a lot of pain. It's difficult for me to concentrate, but I knew that I could teach and I could push through that if I needed to, and that I really wanted to share yoga anyway. I also had a strong feeling that the healing would be strong as well. So my first yoga class was the morning after our first ceremony in the jungle, and it was beautiful. It was difficult for me to teach, not because of my illness, but because I'd been up so late and I was a little bit sick from the plant medicine. But other than that, it was beautiful. And every day after that, it felt great because I was so well.
So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to just let you describe the journey from that first evening and the first sacred plant ceremony that you participated in. And I'm not going to interrupt very much at this point. I'd really just like you to speak from your heart and share with the audience whatever you feel moved to share, and just tell us all about what happened to you in that jungle.
Okay, well, the experience for me was, it was very, very deep and personal, and the idea of the ceremony was to go on a journey with the medicine people there. So it was very, very safe, very well organized. It was taking plant medicine, which is the ayahuasca plant, that is known as their sacred healing plant. And it's not something that we all went off and did as an amazing experience. Let's go and have this, you know, trippy kind of thing. It was really a deep healing and a deep honoring of the earth. And the way that the medicine people described their plant healing was so beautiful. And throughout the ceremony, the shaman will sing the songs that the spirits of the plants give him to call in those spirits with the healing. So the whole thing is intensely beautiful. And I read in a paper in another city in the jungle later on a little bit of an article about the healing journeys. And they say of the ayahuasca plant that it heals the body and it cleanses the mind and spirit of the deepest illnesses of our being. And this is something I read after my whole amazing healing journey, and it just brought tears to my eyes because that is exactly what happened for me. Because the journeying is deeply personal and very, very powerful, it's not something I can share the details of, but I can definitely say that I felt a deep reconnection with the spirit of the earth, and I know that there was something that was very closed in me that was causing all of my illness. I'm feeling that it was a disconnection, and after experiencing that reconnection on a soul level with that plant spirit, I was in complete joy the next day, and I didn't know what had happened. I didn't even have any expectation. I remember journeying and meeting with the spirit of that plant the next day. I was in tears most of the day with the joy of that feeling, and I knew then that even if my physical body stayed as sick as it was, it didn't matter. My whole life had changed. My whole aspect of life and health and healing had completely changed. And we had another ceremony the next night and similar experiences. And the next day we were in a group sharing, and I was looking up at the sky, and I remember saying to a friend of mine on the trip, Mike, I said, you know, I think I can see that tree really clearly, because I'd always had this clouded vision. And I said to him, you know, I think I'm kind of pain-free right now. But I didn't get too excited. I thought, you know, it'll just settle and I'll see how it goes. And then we went to the airport to leave, to fly to Cusco and to do the rest of the trip together. And all of my symptoms came flooding back in the airport. I was very sensitive to sound. I couldn't really focus my mind on what I was seeing sometimes, so I would look at something and
I could see it, but I couldn't link my brain to what I was seeing. So all of that sort of thing started coming back, and the pain in my head, and I got very upset and just cried and thought, it's okay, you know, I've allowed 3 months for healing in South America, so I've got plenty of time, I can work with, you know, Alberto, I can do all sorts of things. And then we got on the plane, and I don't remember to this day, I told you this already, Liz, but I don't remember when the pain went away, but all I know is that I left it behind there, and it was gone.
Oh, that's wonderful. And these days, how are you feeling?
These days I'm feeling great. I would say from that experience, I was probably 99% completely healed. I had about 8 months of feeling absolutely nothing, and now I feel I need a little bit of clearing. I have some headaches now, but, you know, relatively speaking, you know, I'm back to health. So this year, I'll do some cleansing just to clear out anything that still might be lingering in my energy field that's causing some, you know, headaches, things like that. But my life is so different. I didn't work at all for 4 years, and that was a tough challenge. Now I can do anything.
Yeah, that's incredible, especially when you know that there have been practitioners who've told you along the way you might have to accept just feeling okay for the rest of your life.
And I'm so glad they said that.
You chose not to believe that. Mm. It could have been so, so easy for you to have chosen to believe that, as so many others do, when their health practitioner tells them what they think. And thank goodness you didn't take that on board, and you allowed for the possibility that there could be some healing for you. And in fact, there was. And, you know, people who've had very severe health challenges like yourself all say when they come back out of the process what a gift their illness was, what a gift it was for them to have the opportunity to go deeper, to look at the parts of themselves that maybe they had been turning away from, and in so doing, find the healing that they needed, and that's exactly what happened to you.
Mm. Yeah,
so
and for me...
Do you see your illness as a gift?
The interesting thing is that I've always had a deep intuition, and I always knew that I would be well again. I also, throughout the difficult times, I always saw it as a gift. I guess because I knew it would be gone one day, or it would be transformed one day, but I could always see the gift, because all along the way I was being blessed by the illness. You know, I was being made to drop aspects of myself that I didn't need all through the process. And even on the days when, sure, I'd get angry and I'd get upset and I would have downtime, but I always felt that it was a blessing that I wasn't really sure of the absolute outcome of yet. And every month or so, there'd be an amazing experience or an amazing letting go that came of the illness. And I still thought, well, hang on, there might still be more. And, you know, each few months there was something bigger and deeper and better. And I think that's going to be an ongoing thing.
I think it's an ongoing thing for all of us at this time. It's just that some of us are dealing with it at much more intense levels than others. And, you know, I've done a lot of talking with so many amazing people on this program who have shared with me that at the closing of this cycle, this massive solar cycle and galactic cycle that we're in, and the number of cycles that are simultaneously coming to a close around about the time of the galactic alignment in 2012, you know, all these people who've been guests on my show have said in some way or another, we can't possibly even think about moving on and ascending into the next level of our beingness at the ending of one cycle until all of the karma, all of the contracts, all of the trauma and pain that we're all holding personally and collectively is cleared. And so we're experiencing on a mass level, pretty much everybody in the world on some level is clearing all this stuff. And it's not just stuff from this life. It's stuff from all our lives. And for many of us, it's even the stuff that our ancestors weren't able to process that we are now kind of left with, or that we've taken on before we incarnated to clear for them. So in terms of your own insights into where it was that your own challenges arose from and what perhaps in your own stuff that you've needed to clear that has to have been cleared, can you comment on any of that and what you've discovered for yourself about some of those aspects of what contributed to the illness?
Well, I feel for me personally, I went through a lot of soul searching early on, and I came to a point where I realized, and without going into the detail because it is, again, quite personal, but I realized that I had shut a part of myself away, shut it away till later. And I know when I did that, and I know why that happened, and I processed a lot of stuff and I worked through it, and emotionally I was cleared of it, but I wasn't cleared of it spiritually. I still had that closure inside, and although I had released a lot of my emotional attachment and involvement in that whole thing, I didn't know how to open that up again. And for me it was a combination of things and patterns and ways of being that I think really create our illness. Also that sense of being disconnected from, you know, the other aspects of life, and that deep sense of the earth and our connection with her and a connection with the natural world and our connection with prayer and thanksgiving, all of that sort of thing, I think, causes imbalance that can lead to disease. So that's where I feel mine was really grounded. But for me, it was really, it was possible for me to let that go, but I needed to work with some pretty strong, powerful healers to undo what I felt I'd closed.
And now, what are your plans for the future? I know that one of those plans is to go back to Peru, and I'll be joining you this time because I was so inspired by your story and your sharing. And thank you so much for sharing what you did with the audience and for letting everybody know some of what you experienced in Peru. When you left Peru, what happened next?
Well, my feeling, well, in Peru I was so well and feeling fantastic that I got to travel through Peru and Bolivia for 3 months just in joy and experiencing amazing people and places, and have some beautiful contacts for when we return. But my feeling when I came back, I came back to New York, and I met so many people who said to me, either themselves or they had friends that were suffering in a similar way but didn't have the confidence or strength or physical wellness to do something even the way I did it. So my thought was, well, you know, there's no need. There is a need for suffering, but it doesn't have to be lifelong. There are ways of working through and clearing things. So I really felt that I wanted to help people to go and do similar things to what I did, and I would obviously tell them how they could do it on their own very, very easily, or I could be there with them and be the support person to really help. I know that in the midst of my major pain and fatigue, there was no way I could have gone on a plane and gone to Peru and, you know, stayed in Lima for a couple of days in a hostel on my own or a hotel even, and, you know, got a taxi to the airport. There was just no way I could do that sort of thing. So my idea was that anybody who's suffering, particularly with similar things or other things, to have a support person who you can just say one word to, and they will know that you need a place to lie down and a place to rest, or that, you know, if you absolutely can't travel at this time, there can be other arrangements made without you having to do it all yourself. That sort of thing is where my inspiration was. And since putting together a retreat in the jungle, which is working with some of the healers that I met on the last trip last year, it's actually evolved into being a yoga retreat as well. And that's come from my realization that I mentioned earlier, that although yoga wasn't the healing modality that really transformed my experience, in some ways it did. You know, I mean, if I hadn't had the experience of the peace and the deep experiences that take you away from just being the body, I think I would have associated with the pain way more than I had to. And I want people to experience that as well. In the work that I do here, in teaching people who are unwell, or sharing yoga with people who are unwell, and also on this trip. So it's become a yoga retreat. A lot of people coming on the trip are coming because it's a yoga retreat. So that's what it's started as and evolved into.
Fantastic. So what can people expect from the yoga retreat that you're going to be leading?
Well, we're going to be doing... The yoga actually is a major part of the retreat, obviously. The yoga and the medicine or the journeying work, I feel, are going to go together in the way that yoga practices open us up to experience our inner self in a really beautiful and empowering way. They also open us up to outward experiences that we might have, but we might be a little bit blinded to if we're not connected on a deep level with our real true inner self. So to me, the yoga practices are for completely opening our hearts to the Amazon and to the people and to the experiences that we'll have with the plant medicine masters that we'll meet in the jungle. So every day we'll have meditation and yoga practice in the morning. We'll have another session every afternoon or late morning some days, depending on our schedule, where we have an intense asana workshop or a real focus on going deeply into our yoga practices, our asana practice or yoga posture practice, some deep pranayama or breath work. And also every afternoon or late morning session, we'll have a long, deep yoga nidra or deep relaxation, because most people need that more than anything else.
I know I need it. That'll be my favourite part of the day.
Yay.
We've got 15 minutes left before the end of the program, and I just wanted to make a couple of quick announcements before we end the show. What we're going to do right at the end of the program is that Tanya and I are going to lead you through a quick pranayama and sort of relaxation session and connecting at the heart as we always do. And Tanya, what breathing technique were you going to teach the listeners today?
Well, what I wanted to do today was just go through a really basic breathing exercise that helps to still the mind. And maybe if there's time, I really want to work with a meditation that was given to me in one of my meditations to practice with, that real earth-linking energy. So if there's not enough time, perhaps we'll just do the earth-linking meditation.
No, I think we'll definitely have enough time.
Really? So it'll probably go for about 10 minutes altogether.
Okay. All right, that'll be perfect. Before we go there, I just wanted to say thank you again for listening to the show. I hope you've been enjoying the program today. And if you would like to find out more about the program, all you need to do is click on the link to Otherwhere, which is on the bbsradio.com homepage. You can find it on the right-hand side. Everything is in alphabetical order. All of the show names are in alphabetical order. So just scroll down till you get to O, and click on Otherwhere, and that will take you to the Otherwhere bio page, and there you'll find some information about me and about this program, what Otherwhere is all about, and you'll also find the link to the archives. And if you are a subscriber to bbsradio.com, you have free access to all of the archives, so that's a really great thing. there's now over 12 months worth of archives in on those pages at bbsradio.com, and there are some really fantastic interviews, not just from my show but from all of the shows. And also just wanted to quickly ask for anybody out there who may be interested in supporting the program for your help financially. Each week this program costs me and BBS Radio money to produce, and we all do this as a service to others endeavour. So it really, really helps us enormously if you can provide some help with the bandwidth fees. And there's a donate button on the bbsradio.com Otherwear homepage, and if you feel moved to support this work and this station, we are so very, very grateful to everybody out there who has given us support, and I can count them all on five fingers at this stage. So some more people out there who have been regular listeners especially, if you wouldn't mind just helping out, that would be really fantastic. Also, there's an Otherwear news group. If you'd like to catch us on the web, you can find a lovely news group at Yahoo Groups for the Otherwear listeners. It's called the Otherwear Network, and you can find it just by going to yahoogroups.com and then doing a search for Otherwear. And just in case you've just tuned in, my name is Liz Miller. Our guest this week is Tanya Adams. She's a yoga teacher she has been a yoga teacher for the last 11 years, and after having studied and taught a number of yoga styles, and after experiencing her own personal healing journey, which we've just been hearing about, Tanya's focus is now integral style yoga as a tool for therapy and healing. She'll be taking a tour in August. It begins on August the 4th and goes through till the 11th in Peru in the Amazonian jungle. And it'll be a week-long yoga retreat with plant sacred ceremony in the evenings. So Tanya, before we move into the final portion of the show and the meditation that we'll be concluding with, I'd like to just share with the audience a little bit of technical information about ayahuasca. And I'm just reading this from Wikipedia, which actually has a very comprehensive entry on ayahuasca in it, and that's spelled A-Y-A-H-U-A-S-C-A. And that's just one of the spellings of that word, but it's probably the most common one. But basically, the usage has been used largely as a religious sacrament, as we've just heard, no matter which culture it's associated with. Those whose usage of ayahuasca is performed in non-traditional contexts often align themselves with the philosophies and cosmologies associated with ayahuasca shamanism as practiced among indigenous peoples like the Urarina of the Peruvian Amazon. So all around the world, besides it being practiced and used by the indigenous peoples, there are, as I mentioned right at the top of the program, new uses for DMT or dimethyltryptamine, which is the active molecule in the ayahuasca brew. The brew, by the way, is composed of mainly the leaves. I'm just trying to read and speak concise at the same time. There's a vine called the ayahuasca vine. The leaves are macerated and boiled, and the resulting brew may also be combined with other things like mushrooms or other plants. And basically, there are a whole series of steps that people usually take before they take the brew. And that was something that I wanted to ask you, Tanya. Did you fast before you took the brew?
Mm-hmm. We did on the day before. We skipped, I think, one or two meals. But the other preparation often is learning some shamanic-type practices or journeying-type practices, or setting a really deep focus or intent with somebody who's had some of that kind of training. So that's something that we'll be doing before we go on the trip as well. In Melbourne, for the people who are from Australia, and also On the first day, we'll be setting a really powerful intent so that we're going in with that strength of some practice beforehand.
I think that's very, very important. From what I've heard, there are also what are being called ayahuasca tourists. And there are some portions of the South American population who are starting to do ayahuasca tours. And I think that in some of those cases, there isn't really very much preparation given to the people or even background on what they're about to do. So it can be very challenging and probably even a little bit frightening for some. I remember hearing about David Icke going to do ayahuasca in the Amazon rainforest about 5 or 6 years ago, and some of the people who were actually part of that trip said that he completely lost it. And if you know anything about David Icke, he, especially back at that time, was very much focused on fear-based information. And so once he was actually in the ceremony, I think a lot of his own fears confronted him, which sent him a little bit crazy for a little while. And that's something that obviously you don't want to have happen ever, but it does happen. And so if anyone out there is listening who is interested in participating in this type of work and ingesting substances that in some parts of the world are considered illegal, it's very, very important to be discerning about who you choose to go on these tours with. So just a little word of warning there. But did anybody who you were with, Tanya, in the group that you were with, experience anything like that at all?
No, not at all. The experience is very strong and can be fearful. And in our group and in the group that we'll be taking this year, the plant medicine side, I have to stress, has nothing to do with me. I'm not a shaman. I'm not a medicine person at all. And it's really something that the lodge offers, which is why we're doing the retreat there. It's not something that I'm recommending everyone do. It's really a personal choice. So the evening ceremonies are going to be completely optional. You can join the ceremony and just be part of the energy of the group. It's totally optional whether you choose to take any medicine or not. And similar on the trip I did last year, it was really probably half of the group decided to take some medicine. The other half decided to just be in a deep journeying meditation. So I think that it was a very, very safe environment, and the people who were the shamans conducting the whole journeying experience are very, very experienced and very professional and very humble and dedicated to their work. It's not an experience that they take lightly.
Oh, I can imagine. And really what's happening is you are being given a kind of You're basically having an interdimensional experience, aren't you, with plant consciousness. Is that one way that you would describe the experience?
Yeah, definitely.
And are you able to describe any of the physiological effects that it had on you?
It's a journey that you go on. It's different for everybody. It's something where you will move into other streams of reality and experience whatever it is that you need to experience. So you are in an altered state and you are receiving experiences and visions that you need to really work with the deepest part of your being.
And how vivid are the images that you're seeing? Can you describe for the audience, would it be like watching a film? Would it be like having a virtual reality interactive experience? Is it like having a dream or a meditation? Did you have your eyes open or closed?
It depends on the strength of the medicine at the time, and it's different again for everybody. I'm a very, very sensitive person, and for me it was like being in a dream, a little bit stronger than being in a dream. I was in another reality, but I could remove myself from that if I needed to. I had my eyes closed. I mostly couldn't open my eyes, but if I needed to, I could open my eyes and be back where we were physically in our bodies.
Great. And just to finish that thought off, I thought I'd just mention a couple of other bits that are in Wikipedia about ayahuasca and about the introduction of it to the West. It's mentioned in the writings of some of the earliest missionaries to South America, and indeed this is a ceremony that has been going on for many thousands of years in South America. But it wasn't for some time that it became commonly known in the West. The early missionary reports generally claim it as demonic, and great efforts were made by the Roman Catholic Church to stamp it out. When originally researched in the 20th century, however, the active chemical constituent of B. carpi was called telepathine, which was found to be identical to a chemical already isolated from one of the plants and given the name harmaline. And everyone thought that this was originally the active ingredient, telepathine or telepathine. William Burroughs was one of the first people to write about it, and in the 50s, while travelling through South America, was trying to find it in the hopes that it could relieve or cure opiate addiction. And it's really interesting to know that nowadays we are actually using that, and there are many clinics open all over the world that are using it for that specific purpose. And in a book called The Yage Letters, written between Burroughs and Allen Ginsberg, were probably the first major introduction of ayahuasca to the West. It was made more widely known by Terence and Dennis McKenna's experiences with Amazonian tribes, as detailed in the book Invisible Landscape, which they co-authored. Their journey to the rainforest to search for ayahuasca was spurred by their reading of Burroughs and Ginsberg. Dennis later extensively studied the pharmacology, botany and chemistry of ayahuasca, and ukuhi, which is another form of ayahuasca, which were the subjects of his master's thesis. In Brazil, there are a number of modern religious movements based on the use of ayahuasca, and the most famous of them is a church called the Santo Daime, or the Unio de Vegetal, or UDV, usually in an animistic context that may be shamanistic, or more often, as with Santo Daime and the UDV, integrated with Christian beliefs. So that's a really interesting sort of tangent that this kind of ceremony has taken, where it's actually being merged with Christian beliefs and a church setting. Have you heard much about that going on in South America? When you were down in South America yourself, did you hear about how these ceremonies were being sort of taken out of the jungles and into the cities?
I didn't hear about it in Peru in that way. The only way that I heard about it was people offering these kind of experiences to tourists from towns, which is a great thing as well. I mean, it's a healing thing, and they see it as their healing way. But more in Brazil, I've heard of that sort of thing being really merged with the traditional Christian ways. But the other experience the version of that I heard about was I met a friend in the north of Peru who lives in Iquitos, and he had lived in a traditional village for a very long time and had practiced traditional ways and had learned medicine ways with his shaman grandfather and father. And his father had been a headhunter for a long time and had shrunken heads in his home. And they had their practices altered by the evangelical churches coming in. So they no longer practiced their traditional ways. They still practice their medicine ways, but their religious beliefs and their religious practices are more evangelical practices, which I see as being not such a fantastic thing, but they're not living there. I can't really comment. He sees it as being a great thing because all through his very young years, he had to be concerned about his father off in the jungle being attacked by other headhunting tribes. So.
Oh, yeah. What a pressure to grow up with. In terms of other famous people who've written or sung about ayahuasca, there have been several notable celebrities that have publicly discussed their use of ayahuasca, including Sting from The Police, Tori Amos, and Paul Simon, who wrote the song Spirit Voices about his experience with the brew in the Amazon. And actually, the very last book that David Icke penned was the one that he wrote after his trip in the Amazon, and I'll just have to remember the title of it. It's Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion, which was something that he heard repeated to him over and over and over again during his own ayahuasca experiences. And Tanya, did you actually have any experiences like that yourself where you were able to communicate directly or experience direct communications coming to you while you were in the ceremony?
I did, for sure. And that was the most amazing and beautiful part of my healing, that it was such a direct spirit healing. And that's why the very next day I was in that joyful space, because it was that direct personal connection with the spirit of the earth and the plants.
That's amazing. It was certainly the one thing that David Icke couldn't stop talking about when he came back from it, that, you know, there is no doubt whatsoever that you're having an interdimensional experience because of the communications that are coming so directly to you, that you know aren't coming from in you, from within you, that are coming from some other agent of consciousness. Yeah. So is there anything else, Tanya, that you'd like to mention before we conclude the program and say goodbye and start with our quick meditation at the end of the program?
There's nothing I can think of, except I'm guessing you'll give details of how to be in touch about anyone interested in this trip.
Oh, no, actually, I'd love you to do that. So if anyone would like to find out more about the trip, how can they do that?
Okay, well, they can send me an email directly. My email address is omtaraom@hotmail.com. And that's omtaraon@hotmail.com. They could also telephone on 39772-0342, and that's in Australia, so it's a 6-1 before all of that.
Can you repeat that number?
That's about all.
Can you just repeat that number quickly, please?
Sure. It would be 6-1 if you're overseas, then 39772-0342.
That's wonderful. And how full is the trip so far? How many bookings have you actually had?
The trip is probably getting close to half full, and it's going to be a very small group. So I have 4 spaces left, and there'll only be 10 of us.
Okay, wonderful. And I'm going to be there and hopefully reporting from the Amazon rainforest, which will be a lot of fun. I can't wait for that. So everybody, if you'd like to find somewhere nice and comfortable and quiet, let's begin by connecting with each other at the heart. So just find somewhere where you're not going to be disturbed for the next 20 minutes or so. We're going to begin the meditation, and if you would like to sit quietly for another few minutes after that, or lying quietly, we invite you to do that now as well. We'll basically sign off at the point in time when we would normally have the silence in the meditation. Once you've found that spot, make sure that you're not going to be disturbed, and if you need to, unplug the phone or turn the phone off. Draw the curtains. Make sure that you're warm enough or cool enough if you're somewhere very hot. And then begin by taking some nice rhythmic breaths. If you're lying down, that's okay. You can be sitting or lying. Whatever position that you're in, just check as you're breathing that your spine feels lovely and straight. If you need to, lengthen the back of your neck by drawing your chin closer in towards your chest. Take your shoulders back a little to open up the front of the chest, and then drop your shoulders back and down. You might feel a slight pinch in the shoulder blades as you do this. And if you're lying on the floor or on something soft, just allow your shoulder blades to flatten out underneath you. Place your hands by your sides, turn the palms up. Or if you're sitting, you can rest your hands, or the backs of your hands over your knees, letting your fingers curl gently. Check that your feet are comfortably apart, and
that your toes are turned outwards so that there is a softness from the toes all the way up the legs into the inner thighs and groin. And now let's all take a deep breath together. So breathe in and take a really, really deep breath and gather up all of the busyness and all of the activity of the last week. Then open your mouth and sigh the breath out and just let it go. Inhaling again, drawing in a deep, long breath. And sighing the breath out, feeling every muscle in your body softening as you do this. And a third time, let's make this the deepest breath that you can, drawing it in right up to the top of your lungs, right up to the collarbone, so your lungs are full, full, full. And then exhale and give in completely. Just sigh all of the stress out of your body. Normally, I'll take some nice, normal breaths. Don't try to force it into any particular pattern now. But notice how much of a difference you've already made just by incorporating your consciousness with your breath. And for a few moments, simply be in the joy of breathing. You nourish your body and all of your cells with oxygen and life force. The yogis have called it prana for millennia. It's also known as chi or ki, biodynamic energy, God force, higher self. There are so many different names that we give to this force that animates us. So as you take the breath in, imagine that you're drawing the oxygen particles in as highly charged oxygen and life force particles. See them swirling and twirling around inside your lungs. And as you exhale, send that light that comes in with the breath into every single cell of your body. As you do this, feel as though you're just reminding all of your cells of their idealized functions. The light is reminding them of their perfect frequencies. Then take your focus back up to your heart. Once you can see that your whole being is sparkling and shining, and see a brighter point of light at your heart center. Feel the love and gratitude and compassion that you have seated in your heart. As you do that, recognize that your heart is also a sacred portal to unity consciousness. Feel that portal beginning to open and expand as you focus your attention there. Continue to breathe deeply as you feel the heart expanding. Know that we're all doing this together. Imagine all of us in a circle, a beautiful circle of light, connected at the heart. Each one of us allows our sacred heart center to open and become that portal. We can allow our love to flow out to everybody else in the group and feel it return to our hearts, mingled with all of the love of everybody else in our circle. We recognize how interconnected we all are. As you continue to breathe, with the in-breath, breathe in my sacred love that I send out to you. Feel the gratitude that I have for each one of you and for the beautiful radiance that you contribute to these broadcasts. As I breathe in, your sacred love flows into me. Feels so beautiful. So see our lovely circle of lights charged up and energized with that love, light and power of our highest intentions and love. And now let's invite all of the other people in this web of love that are all around the world who share these intentions with us to grow as beings in love, light and power, and who truly want and hope for peace in our world. As we breathe, we share this breath with them. See those lines of light intersecting and connecting with all these other beings around the world who are consciously working for peace and upliftment. And then let's continue to connect that web of love and light to all other beings and all life on our planet. Every person, every plant, every bird and animal, every insect and fish. We see that web of love that interconnects us all, that interconnects us at our deepest essence. So now we have completely strengthened that beautiful image. I'm going to hand over to Tanya, and she's going to take us through a pranayam and a meditation exercise. So thank you, everybody. I'm going to say goodnight for now and hand you all over to Tanya Adams, our guest on Otherwhere this week. Namaste.